This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to www.bbc.co.uk/radio3.
The year is around 750. The place, Tauberbischofsheim, near Würzburg in Germany. A fierce thunderstorm rages and the local inhabitants have taken refuge in the church. They are expecting something to be done. Their old religion had specialists who could calm storms. Suddenly a diminutive figure rushes out into the eye of the storm. She makes the sign of the cross and calls three times to the Christian God to make the storm abate. She's heard. The sun comes out. The local people are convinced of the value of the new religion. This is all in a day's work for Abbess Lioba, but she is far from her birthplace in Anglo-Saxon England. Most of what we know about Lioba is recorded in an account of her life written by Ruldolf of Fulda some 50 years after her death in 782, when her cult as a saint was being promoted in his community. Ruldolf had not known Lioba himself, but he was able to draw on the recollections of men and women who had. These included her kinswoman Thecla, who had urged her to go out to face the storm, and subsequently became abbess of nearby Kitzingen and Oxenfurt. Lioba's is the only more or less contemporary saint's life for an Anglo-Saxon female religious surviving from the conversion period, even if it was written in Germany rather than in England. It tells us how, contrary to the monastic ideal of stabilitas, that is, staying within one's monastery, Lioba came to journey from England to Germany and became the advisor of religious men, as well as of members of the Frankish royal house. From Ruldolf, we learn that Lioba had been born in the west of England to elderly parents who, inspired by a dream, entered Lioba as a child into the nunnery of Wimborne in Dorset. Wimborne was a royal foundation and one of the signs that the family was well connected. They seemed to have been part of a group of West Saxons who had moved into the west of England to hold it on behalf of the West Saxon king. This required not only making sure that the indigenous inhabitants, the British, behaved themselves and paid their taxes, but also the overhauling of their churches. For although the British of the West had taken up Christianity some 200 years before the West Saxons, an encounter between their church leaders and Archbishop Augustine of Canterbury had not gone well. Popes became increasingly convinced that some of the British church's traditional customs bordered on the heretical, and tacitly approved the takeover of their churches by the squeaky clean, newly converted Anglo-Saxons. Wimborne may have been a British religious centre before it became an Anglo-Saxon one. Its founding abbesses were sisters of one of the West Saxon kings, another demonstration of how closely the interests of church and kingship were interwoven at this time. Rudolf recounts some intriguing tales of life at Wimborne while Lioba was growing up there under Abbess Tetter. They are not standard hagiographic fare, and perhaps give us something of the flavour of religious life in a time not far removed from rather different religious practices. In one, lost keys to the church are found to have been taken by a little fox, who miraculously returns them and drops dead after a vigorous round of praying from the nuns. In another, the young nuns trampled the grave of an unpopular prioress and uttered bitter curses over her dead body to assuage their outraged feelings. They are then somewhat disconcerted to see her grave sink beneath the surface of the ground. The abbess hastily organised a round of fasting and prayer until the grave was restored to normal height, and it was presumed the soul of the cruel prioress had been released from torment. The importance of moderation and Christian charity in all things was no doubt the message to be drawn. Rudolf is at pains to present Wimborne conforming to the ideals of a nunnery at the time he wrote in the 9th century, a period of conspicuous monastic reform when the rule of St Benedict was highly regarded. Life in early Anglo-Saxon religious houses was rather more ad hoc, and nuns remained very much part of their birth families. One way to think of Lioba's family is as members of a pioneer society, blazing a trail in potentially hostile territory. A characteristic of such societies is a close-knit group of kinsmen and friends, suspicious of outsiders. Women would be expected to pull their weight and might get opportunities that were usually denied them in more settled societies. Such attitudes were to benefit Lioba, when one of her kinsmen found himself in charge of church organisation on the northern borders of the great Kingdom of Francia, that included much of what is now France, Belgium and Western Germany. This was Boniface. He had grown up with Leoba's father and was related to her mother. We don't know the exact relationship of Boniface and Leoba, but they were evidently of different generations, so perhaps first cousins once removed, just possibly uncle and niece. Boniface, whose Anglo-Saxon name was Winfrith, had a successful career in the West Saxon Church, especially as a monastic teacher. After something of a midlife crisis, he decided in 716 to throw it all up in order to become a missionary in Saxony, one of the continental homelands of the Anglo-Saxons, as yet unconverted to Christianity. Boniface was eventually to be killed in 754 on a mission to pagan Frisia, and came to be seen as Germany's preeminent martyr saint. But in between, he was diverted by the papacy to work in setting up a church structure on the northern fringes of Francia. The success of the Anglo-Saxons in sorting out the British church had convinced Pope Gregory II that Winfrith, on whom he bestowed the new name of Boniface, was just what was needed in Hesse and Thuringia, areas that had been introduced to Christianity but were not very satisfactorily Christian. Boniface diligently set about his commission, but he was not very happy with churchmen already working there, Irish, Franks and other Germans, who were naturally not delighted to have this outsider imposed upon them. Boniface began to think longingly of his close-knit family and friends back home, and began to look for new recruits from among them. It was as he was building up his base of Anglo-Saxons that he received, perhaps unexpectedly, a letter from his young kinswoman, Leoba. The letter is one of the few sources for Leoba that survives independently of Rudolf's account. It confirms what he says about her being well-educated. It is written in good Latin prose, and Leoba included four lines of verse to show she had mastered writing them as well. Putting the skills she had acquired in Latin rhetoric to good use, Leoba reminded Boniface of his obligations towards her as a kinsman of her mother and friend of her father. "Would that I, although unworthy, might deserve to have you in place of a brother," Leoba writes. "For none of the men of my race have I placed so much faith and hope as in you. I have troubled to send this small gift in order that you may hold me in your memory, and not through the great distance separating us, let me pass into oblivion." The letter did the trick. Boniface invited Leoba to join him, and within a few years she found herself in charge of a small monastic house in Tauber Bischofsheim in modern Westphalia. The inhabitants had already been introduced to Christianity, but not habituated to it by living alongside those who had been trained in the religion. While it may not have been a particularly dangerous area, there was evidently some suspicion of the foreigners. When a dead baby was found in the village's millstream, an angry crowd accused one of the nuns of being responsible, and Leoba had to assert her authority. But for the most part, she seems to have tried to win over the locals by demonstrating Christianity's advantages and its effectiveness in everyday problems. She partly did this by being very hospitable and holding great banquets for the richer members of the region, while the destitute were fed and clothed by the nuns. Local crises, such as the storm, provided an opportunity for decisive interventions, underpinned by chanting, prayers and processions. Her nunnery had other functions as well. It housed at least one priest to provide necessary services for the local community, as well as the nunnery. It took in and trained local girls, who would provide the next generation of religious women. Many of them would no doubt found or run family monasteries of the type found in Anglo-Saxon England. Rudolf records how Leoba nursed one of these recruits back to health in the girl's own home, just across the river from the nunnery. Nunneries probably operated in similar ways back home in England, but we have little information of this type for them. Rudolf's determination to present Leoba as a model Benedictine abbess can get in the way of a more realistic portrait of her as a religious leader, not to mention as a woman, for some of what he says is derived from accounts of exemplary male monastic leaders. Lioba, in this sense, is an honorary man, filling a role that was more typically male, and evidently filling it to complete satisfaction. Her name, Rudolf explains, means beloved, and she does seem to have been beloved by those who lived with her, as well as by God. One of the mementos of her preserved at Tauber Bischofsheim was a small cup from which she used to drink, which was known as the Beloved's Little One. Lioba was not the only woman who came from Wessex to work with Boniface, but she was the most significant and had oversight of a network of nunneries. Boniface made it clear before his death that he regarded her as his spiritual heir, and she seems to have inherited some aspects of his role as the Apostle of Germany. Of course, there were limits to the positions that she could hold because a woman could not become a priest. More broadly, Lioba does seem to have been seen as embodying the spiritual aura that had been associated with Boniface. Not only did churchmen and women seek her advice, but she, like Boniface, was a visitor at the Frankish royal court. Rudolf says that she was a particular favourite of Charlemagne's wife, Hildegard, who made special provision for her care in old age. The fact that Lioba was Boniface's closest relative in Germany explains the unusual opportunities given to her. But his patronage and kinship would not have been enough if she had not had her own charisma and skills, as Rudolf endeavoured to show. Those powers continued after her death, when she was not only buried at Fulda, as Boniface had wished, but became one of its most significant saints. Boniface had wanted Lioba to be buried in the same tomb as him. This never happened, but she was buried near him in the church. In 738, her body was moved to her own burial church at Pettersberg, some 4 kilometres away on the outskirts of Fulda. Some historians have seen in this distancing of the body of Lioba male prejudice against her from the Fulda monks in a period of monastic reform. But if Fulda had wanted to sideline Lioba, benign neglect was all that was required. Rather, the translation of her body to Pettersberg in 738 marked a major promotion of her cult, underpinned by the account of her life written by Rudolf that was specially commissioned to support it. Greater involvement of ordinary people in organised religion was one of the other aims of the religious reform movement of this time. On Pettersberg, Lioba's cult was more readily available to pilgrims, perhaps especially to women. Certainly in later centuries, St. Lioba's intervention was specially sought by women for sick babies. An early modern woodcut shows Lioba nursing a sick child while a mother lowers a baby into her empty tomb to await a cure. Baby clothes and little crutches hanging on the wall behind demonstrate the efficacy of previous interventions. Lioba is still an active saint today, both in Fulda and at her nunnery site in Tauber Bischofsheim. Every year on the anniversary of her death on the 28th of September, her saint's day, there is a procession in her honour from the cathedral in the centre of Fulda to her own church on the Pettersberg. It reenacts the journey her remains made in 838. Thanks to the effort of Rudolf, Lioba is the best recorded of all the early Anglo-Saxon women whose lives were changed and inspired by Christianity. She studied and mastered Latin, travelled from Dorset to central Germany, set up and ran a network of nunneries to underpin local religious provision, was the soulmate of the great Boniface, the advisor of monks and royalty. And she's still there in the middle of Germany, providing consolation today.